The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. Constituency Man in Line's halfway through this administration. We're going around all the constituencies and talking to the two MHKs that represent the constituency today. Hopping off in Douglas Central with Anne Corlett and Chris Thomas, both former Douglas councillors. Chris Thomas elected to Douglas West in a by-election and twice re-elected. And call it re-elected in 2021. So, Faster Mike, good afternoon. Good to see you, Anne.
Faster Mike.
It's been a while since we sat in Douglas Yacht Club and talked about the future of this this administration. Do you have an overall view of how the past 2.5 years have gone, Anne?
Look, I think we've had some positives, but I think we have moved slowly. I think I would like to see more happening, things being decided, developed quicker.
Chris Thomas?
Yes, slowly is a good word, and I'm not sure we're clear enough on the direction that we want to go. So in the last Tim Wood, the Chief Minister announced that I was now part of an alternative policy group. It's for us to make a statement about that, but I'm glad he's noticed that a group of people are working together to refine the direction of policy and to get the public involved now, if necessary, but certainly better in the 2026 general election.
What do you pick up from the street, from constituents, about what the public thinks of politics at the moment on the island?
They're very distrustful, they're very disappointed. So I had a person who's older than me even, who phoned me in the last couple of days just to make sure I knew that people of her age, even people of her age, were just so disappointed with all politicians.
Mm.
I would agree with that. You know, people just don't see anything happening. Nothing is changing in their lives or situations that they feel any positive moves are being made.
But I know for full disclosure here, of course, I'm a constituent of both of you living in Douglas Central. Manx Radio is in Douglas Central as well. So I happen to know that you are both assiduous constituency MHKs, and you get in touch with people who get in touch with you. So on a personal level, no animosity from voters. It's just the government in general.
Yes, really. Yeah, I think it's, you know, collectively as a government, people just don't feel we're doing enough or doing things quickly enough.
Right, let's get to the phones then. Howard's first on with us today. Howard, you're live with Chris Thomas and Anne Corlett.
Good afternoon, Andy, and to your guests, Chris and Anne. Just a simple question, and we seem to have a collective period here. The horse trams, it's an old chestnut, and you're going to get a nod there saying, oh my God, not again. But this is one of the very important parts of the heritage on the island. It started off when they rebuilt the promenade, the failure to go through to the sea terminal, and a continued failure to go through. The point where they were ready, virtually, they were putting tenders out to demolish the old buildings on Tramway Terrace where the stables are. And I noticed this week someone's putting in application for the two fields at the bottom of Blackberry Lane where they meet up with Summer Hill. Now, for many, many years, and I don't know what the system is now, I've seen trailers taking the horses away, but that's where they used to put the horses up there on their rest days. And that, well, I'd say for 50 to 60 years, that's where these horses have been going up. All the fields up on the right-hand side there they used. Are these all parts of the jigsaw that's been slowly removed and lost? And in the end, they can't complete the jigsaw because there's so many pieces missing. They say, well, we'll scrap it and put it in the bin. What are the opinions of Chris and Mrs. call it, what are their opinions of the horse trams being continued, and why are so many pieces of the system being gradually eroded?
And call it?
Well, firstly, I do support the horse trams. I think they're a historical part of our not only our national heritage but our tourism offer. I have supported all along that they run the full length of the prom. Obviously, there are financial issues with that. I mean, I believe that the money was allocated for that in the first place, but used elsewhere. So I think we have to keep pushing for, at some point, the reinstatement of the horse trams for the full length.
Chris Thomas?
Yeah, so Minister Baker actually announced in the July 2020 COVID budget very clearly that the money for the horse trams maintenance was actually going to be transferred into the promenade scheme. He even identified the amount, £750,000, and also put on hold the whole length project. Now it's a question for Minister Crookle and Council of Ministers proposing successfully to Treasury that this is the most important thing that they need to do, or even, well, because at the moment DOI doesn't really have any capital projects that have gone through. That's why I say the most. So is it the most important thing, or do we need things at the airport, or things for our 50-year link span, or to deal with our highways? So there's a difficult sell from Minister Crookle through to Treasury and Council Ministers, and then it would have to come to Tim Ward, because every pound that Tim Ward approves is important these days, and we're spending money on mostly through Department for Enterprise on big schemes rather than on bread and butter stuff like highways and link span that's 50 year old and stuff that to make the airport and easier for airlines. And that's why I'd like to think that when I went to Department of Infrastructure, my instruction was to put the heritage transport out to a charity. That was quite clear. That's what Chief Minister sort of gave me as my job. That can't be done until you've investigated whether that would actually make sense. I'm quite pleased with the way that the report came back and the way that the public got involved. And I now think we've got to all get together and make sure that in a realistic time frame, the horse trams is put back together to the sea terminal. The building at the far end is preserved. Very interesting about Blackberry Lane. I'd miss that. But we've also got the other issue about where do the horse trammers come from? Because as far as I remember, President of Tim Wall isn't producing new horse tramming horses anymore, so they've got to come from somewhere. So it's an important part of our tradition, our culture, our future, and we've got to have a joined up plan for it, and that's down to Minister Crookle or whoever is taking responsibility for it.
Howard?
I think the trammers, they were bred in house. That's when they had a fairly substantial lot of horses on the stable. But nowadays, I think they come from Ireland, and they will be transported in. But irrespective of that, horses have been brought in and out all over the years. But the fact that gradually the DOI are taking this, as I say, we look at it as a box, a brand new box, open it up, that's fine. It ran, it made money. And then, like everything else, the tourist industry disappeared. And it's not only here, it's in the UK, but it disappeared in a larger form here. And the horse trams are very much a part of it. And they should be kept, and kept in more or less in their original form. And the jigsaw pieces that's been taken out can only serve to deplete what we already have.
Okay.
And make it less interesting and less capable of being supported by the government.
Okay, Ann Caller.
I was going to add there that, you know, I absolutely agree this is not a top priority for infrastructure. There are bigger projects and smaller projects that need to come before the horse trams. But I do think, you know, some assurances is required around it and a plan for the future.
Yeah. It may not be a top priority, but it's a very visible priority, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
So, and it has iconic status. We understand that maybe things that you know, save lives, like the airport and like the link span. But the fact that the money was there and the money wasn't there, it's like a game of hokey cokey, in, out, in, out.
Absolutely.
And you talked about that disconnect between the public and politicians. Maybe this is symptomatic of it.
Andy, wouldn't it be great if we just had a plan with the priorities on so that actually we all know...
Or like a 1 to 10 plan.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. What's the top 10? Where do things sit in that? And what's the plan to achieve those top 10 priorities?
Okay, final word, Howard.
Ms. Collett has already advocated, and she's given her opinion that she's in favour of the horse trams. But what is, Mr. Chris Thomas, what are you in favour of the horse trams?
I always have been. I'm in favour. I'm on record as being in favour. I always learn something from you, the real Howard Quayle as well, Howard, when you phone in. We've always talked about this. So thank you very much for educating me a bit more about the trammers. But I always have been in favour. It's in all my manifestos. We also have to give... a thanks for the investment in the horse trams in the, by the last government. So, for instance, I think they spent £3 million on the new buildings down the far end. I think it added £5 million to the cost of the promenade to deal with the horse trams because it made the job much more difficult. So we have to acknowledge that that money has been spent. We've still got £2 million to spend, apparently, and that needs to be found eventually at the right time to be done properly.
OK, all right. Thanks, okay. Howard.
Well, thank you, Chris and Anne, for your answers.
Okay,
thank you again.
Good to hear from you. Thanks for that. Have a good Easter. Thanks, Howard. Here's a note in from Terry, who just said, this was one for the pair of you. Anne and Chris, what on earth is going on at Westmorland Road and Domain Road? Anne Corlett.
Okay, well, I've made my opinion on the Westmorland Village site very clear. I do think that that's a brownfield site that is suitable for housing and accommodation. But I do think that what's proposed is over-intensive development. I think there's going to be huge issues around parking, even though there was a little bit of good news for residents recently when Chris asked a question about parking permits. And the infrastructure minister said none would be issued to the residents in Westmorland Village. I'll let Chris carry on with that.
Parking is a major issue, not only for existing residents rather than the new residents in Westmorland Village, but also for the school, for the health facilities, for the tennis club, for the bowls club, for people attending the Scouts, for all of the other facilities. There are businesses along there doing various things.
Well, for new listeners, start here. This thing called the Manx Development Corporation was set up. It's non-FOIable. We can't find out anything about them. The money has been allocated by the Treasury. They're doing up the old nurse's home. That seems to be taking forever. They've got a plan for almost like a garden city between Domain Road and Westmorland Road that may or may not have parking, may or may not have electric car points. People may or may not be allowed to own cars. At the moment, it's a bit obfuscatory, really. So, it's a bit opaque.
So the committee in principle has given planning permission, but it's subject to the negotiations over various things, including open spaces, including housing. Parking made progress by saying on-street parking permits won't be issued, according to the minister, this minister. When I asked him how that would be put in force, he was a bit vaguer, so we need to make that less vague. Secondly, that area around there needs much longer control and much more extensive control, and we need to work up a plan with those businesses, with all the other facilities that I've already listed. Beyond that, I just can't get my head around Manx Development Corporation. I'm now past it's not being FOIable. Look, Douglas City Council spent £11.6 million on 60-plus apartments on Peel Road. Mm-hmm. It went to plan. It came in, you know, on time, on budget. Why couldn't they have been trusted to build something here? As it is, I managed to establish, it hasn't really been focused on in the media as yet, but I managed to establish that it wasn't clear who was going to find the tenants for this property. It seems like none of them are going to be sold. So how long does that mean that Manx Development Corporation is going to become a housing association? How's that going to work? As far as I can tell, Douglas City Council isn't in discussions with the Manx Development Corporation about being a housing association. And beyond that, there are all sorts of other issues that I'll be unveiling.
How do the council feel about being elbowed out of this virtually?
I don't think they're very happy. I think they're keeping the powder dry till after Easter or something like that, but I don't think they're very happy.
This is Douglas City Council. Council's territory.
It is. It is. And it's a really good, as I say, for me, it's an ideal spot for housing. but there's no affordable housing on this, as far as we know. And you're right, you know, for some social housing, it's an ideal situation. I just feel the whole thing is over-intensive
and what's going to happen
very down, well thought out.
What's going to happen down the lower end of Domain Road when it goes on to Bucks Road, when you can't find a parking space for love nor money after 2 o'clock in the afternoon? What's going to happen there?
Well, exactly. And, you know, it's been set up as this 20-minute village. Well, I live at the bottom of Bray Hill and I'm 20 minutes from town too. So that's really not applicable. But we're going to be reliant on bus services. There isn't one. There is a bus stop outside. I think there's one bus that goes to the hospital. That's about it. And Douglas Central, we've got very little in the way of buses at all.
I find it surprising, and the messages I get from the public find it surprising, that we haven't had a detailed plan of what good news this is. It could be good news. It could be something iconic. It could really work for people in Douglas. It could be a showcase for what the Isle of Man can do. But nobody knows really what's going to happen. Nobody knows. I mean, we know where the money's coming from, but is there going to be a profit motive in this? Are the directors going to be getting any bonuses out of this? Chris Thomas, have you any idea of this?
So that's what frustrated me when my question was played out in the media and public discussion, because all of a sudden the suggestion was made that it was wrong that Douglas City Council had 75 million of housing loans. Well, Douglas City Council has got 100-year-plus history of running houses. It's got 2,500 housing units. Manx Development Corporation has got access to a 100 million facility for housing. We don't know what the total budget is for the Westmorland Village. We don't know how it's... there are no pre-lets. There are no pre-sales, apparently. This is a huge risk, and that's why we need alternative policy. And by the way, Mrs. Corlett's talking today, we've got a new member of the Rebel Alliance as the Chief Minister.
We absolutely agree on this, because you're absolutely right. There is no information around it. And Chris is right. How much... appreciation has been given to schools. Balakameen is now over capacity quite considerably. And, you know, that's where we would be directing children and young people, is to Henry Bloom Noble and Balakameen.
Sure. And as you mentioned, Henry Bloom Noble at the end of that road by Westmorland Road by the old Noble, on the old Noble site. But traffic presumably will increase whether they like it or not.
Well, it has to, doesn't it? Whether that's public transport or cars.
So we haven't given justice to the active travel notion behind it, but in the area plan for the east, which had an active travel concept, I think less than 40 housing units were envisaged for this site. We've now got 170 proposed with outline in principle planning permission subject to the negotiations. That's a huge increase. It obviously helps government meet its housing target, but what it says in the island plan is 1,000 extra occupied houses. So that could be making some of the apartments into Main Road, some of the empty houses around that part of Douglas occupiable and occupied, rather than building new houses around that site. So, you know, to me it's wrong that the public and politicians don't actually know what the plans are, given we're taking on £100 million of extra debt, 1/10 of the island's total debt, for a new body that we don't know what they'll be like in 25 years. In Jersey, they had an entity like that. It got into financial difficulties. They had to recreate it, and now a substantial part of their plans match up with pre-sales and pre-lets. So that's why I'm pursuing this issue. You know, what is going to happen? Is Douglas City Council going to have to borrow money to take on this elderly person's complex from the Manx Development Corporation, or is Manx Development Corporation going to become a second public sector landlord inside Douglas City?
Yeah, or have some sort of commissioning basis that they let out to... Douglas Council, retain the property, Douglas Council run it. How is this going to work?
I mean, the great news for me would be if the treasurer and the leader and the housing chair of Douglas City Council comes in next week and says everything's fine. But let's see whether they do accept that invitation.
Okay, David, you're live with Chris Thomas and Anne Corlett.
Hello there. Hi, Andrew. What happened yesterday when I was listening, there was a gentleman on saying about there's no accountability in government. No matter what people do, there seems to be no accountability. And I just wondered what the views of your two guests on. There's a shop that the government advertises for rent at £3,500 a week. It's for 2 weeks over a pop-up shop over the TT. Now, there's a proviso that says that the roof's leaking. So what I'd like to know is, can you rent that property with a leaking roof? And what happens if water gets to the electrics and somebody gets injured or worse? And also, when it comes down to accountability, who's the person in charge of estates who knows that this building has got a leaking roof as it's not repaired it? Should he really still have a job?
Chris Thomas, this is the M&Co site on Chester Street.
So, Public Estates is involved in all infrastructure management, except in a few cases. One of those cases is schools. I guess this is a former school primarily, so I'm not exactly
St.
sure
Thomas's,
whether,
isn't it?
To what extent it will be Department of Education or Public Estate. So that's the answer to the first question. In terms of liability, it's obviously a huge issue. I can think of a case when I was minister where there was a lot of confusion around who was responsible for a fire that resulted from water onto electrics. So that's an important issue. I don't know enough about how it was let out last year, whether, because I think it was let out last year, in terms of fixing roofs and that sort of thing. If there was an infinite pot and a huge amount of workers, I'm sure everything would be fixed all of the time. But infrastructure has been starved of resources for 10 years relative to some other parts of government. Mm. And I guess that doesn't make a lot of sense to spend money on a school whose future of the site hasn't yet been determined, sadly and wrongly, and that's why we need alternative policy, because it's absolutely daft to have not made up a mind what the future of Chester Street and St Thomas's and all those sites along there is.
And Colin?
Yeah, well, St Thomas's itself is obviously belongs to the church, but the playground and the underneath must be government, I'm assuming. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, as any landlord, surely there's a responsibility to make sure your property that you're letting out is watertight. And it's quite right to say, what would be the point in renting and risking things? It's no use having a property that rains on the inside, is it? So I think the least you could expect if you were renting a property even for only 2 weeks, that it's watertight.
Okay, here's a note. Sorry, for
clarity. So next to the church, there's a St Thomas's school where all the kids moved out and went up to School Valagio. So that's the building I'm talking about.
Yeah.
As far as I remember, it is under the playground area.
It's underneath.
I think the school itself belongs to the church.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Okay, here's a message in from Louise. Can you ask the two MHKs what is going to happen to Lord Street flats in Douglas? And call it?
I wish I knew. I really do wish I knew. I get this from constituents all the time, and I can never seem to get a definitive answer of what's the plan for it, or any kind of answer at all, actually.
Who's the freeholder?
Douglas City Council. So I asked the question. I asked the question in Tim Wood, and the Minister of Infrastructure seemed to give the impression that it was up to Douglas City Council to decide. My sources say they have been in discussions with Manx Development Corporation, but I get an impression that other people are more interested in it than Manx Development Corporation. So I raise the question on the floor of Tim Wood, do we really want to lose control of such an important site when we supposedly have housing as our big policy objective? The difficulties with the site are perhaps three that I remember. The first one is, whatever you do with it, if you demolish it, it's going to be massively impacting on traffic, because that's a major thoroughfare, and it's not safe to knock big buildings down. That number two, it's pretty solid. You know, it's one of the first big schemes, so it's going to be pretty hard to take down. So if it's at all possible, you want to reuse what's there already. And the third one is, unfortunately, you know, parts of it are underground, and it's pretty hard to get access to if you're older or in wheelchairs and things. So you'd have to fundamentally, you probably have to turn the building round. That was the last plan I saw. You turn the building round and make the building accessible from the from the back of Athol Street. So something's got to happen. And again, it's another pursuit of mine. We need to know what's going to happen to Lord Street Flats, and we need to see government working with Douglas City Council to get the public interest served.
Have you had any words with Douglas City Council on the subject?
I always having words with all sorts of people, and who I've talked to has to be private.
Okay. Ann Caller?
Yes, I mean, I've asked the question, but have not got any real answers back. So I don't think there's any real decisions made around it.
OK, Stephen, you're live with Chris Thomas and Anne Corlett.
Yeah, good afternoon, guests. Good afternoon, Andy, and good afternoon, listeners. Could I just ask and reflect with you on you? I think Mr. Thomas' initial comment spoke about policies and plans, which he will know I'm a great supporter of, making a plan and trying to make sure it's abided by. And we had the call for sites for Douglas area, and Mrs. Corlett will be aware of this as well, and the Westmoreland Road site was designated for 37 odd houses on that site, and sadly what we've got now is a very over intensive use of the site, as Mrs. Corlett said. So my questions are, we've also got the strategic plan, which indicated how we can develop the island and make sure that it said that the community was at the heart of the plan and the strategic plan going forward. Now, included within the strategic plan is open space and requirements for a harmonious living together. Now, the plan we've got on Westmoreland Road seems to have completely ignored the Douglas area plan of what the designations are for the number of houses on it, and it also completely ignores the requirements within the strategic plan. So it comes back to, you make these plans, and these plans were approved by Tynwald, incidentally. How can the voting people have any confidence in our government, which, as you know, I think is a date with the unknown, and we've had various aspects of the programme for government which none of us had any input into, but we certainly did have input into the strategic plan and the call for sites. So how do we go forward from this? Where do we go from this when we expect we contribute to the plans and it's virtually ignored?
And call it.
I think, you know, you make a very good point here that strategies, policies, plans, they have to be aligned. And because government still works in silos, it means that something going on in one place can be directly conflicted by a policy, plan, strategy in another. And we have to find a way to work together on this and to try to at least ensure that strategies do align. How do we do that? How do we pull those things together? You know, I think as members we constantly try, but things are out of our control to some degree. And
so who derails that?
I don't think it's always intentionally done. I really don't. I think, you know, you've got people in one department trying to do a good thing, but often conflicts unknowingly and unwittingly with things elsewhere.
Chris Thomas?
So various decisions have been made in respect of the Westmoreland Village. The first one is the planning decision, and formally that's an independent planning committee. It's appealable. I think, knowing, you know, we've spoken, Stephen, and there might well be interested parties who are able to appeal a decision when it's made, but that decision hasn't been made as yet because there are still negotiations to do with housing and open spaces. So you make really good points. Somebody in government's now going to have to decide all these open questions that I've laid down today about what's going to happen to all these apartments if they do get planning permission eventually and are built. Secondly, open spaces. You know, Douglas City Council's got to, I mean, I attended the meeting, the planning committee meeting, and at that point they hadn't heard formally from Douglas City Council about open spaces. I don't know whether that was deliberate or the letter had got lost or whatever, but it's still an open issue. So there are lots of separate decisions. Basically, I blame the highest levels of government and council ministers because they they keep dropping that phrase occupied homes from their target for homes. Whenever you hear the Chief Minister talk about it, he's talking about 1,000 new homes. That's what he always says. And so for him, it's a really good thing to have 170 of his target, you know, between, you know, where we represent, where you live, Stephen. It'd be helpful to have 100 plus on Lake Road. It'd be helpful to have loads of new apartments down in Port Erin. It would be helpful to have loads of apartments, more apartments around the Lower Douglas in the brownfield sites there. But that's not what I find important. I find we need to have help to get homes that are currently vacant reoccupied. We need to help people preserve the masses of houses, make them usable, the masses of houses that are underdeveloped. That costs more money and it's harder work and it's not quite as simple. And these proper thinking.
Okay, Stephen.
Well, yes, I was going to come on to this part of the equation. I think it is all together. It is they're not separate. I was very surprised that when the Committee on the Built Environment and Heritage and Vernacular Buildings presented their committee's report, and there seemed to be great hostility from the Council of Ministers to some of the recommendations within it, and trying to find solutions. Now, it would appear that some things are better than others in regard that if it's a big development, then it seems to have government support. But like many years ago, there used to be the grant aid system, which would give ordinary individual people the ability to get grants from government just to help them over that line, where it might have made the difference between purchasing the property and carrying out the renovations or not doing it. And as you say, Chris, there is over 5,000, I believe, empty properties. A lot of these, despite what has been said, will not lend money on them because they do not carry the necessary certification of roofs, plumbing, electrics, so forth and so on. There's a great deal of expressing that there should be more stick to these property owners rather than carrot. And for the life of me, I can't understand why it's okay to lend or give in grant aid many millions of pounds out to big developers, but if you're an ordinary bod wanting to buy an older property that needs renovation, then there's no help whatsoever. And okay, I would hope that the both of you will lobby, if you agree with what I'm saying, will lobby the Treasury Minister next year for some form of grant aid to be reintroduced for this issue.
Okay, all right, Stephen, we appreciate your call. Thanks for being with us today. There was a question.
We need a grant system.
I did have a question in also regard, and it mentioned specifically Allen Street and Tinwell Street, to say there are dilapidated properties, abandoned properties in some cases, and you know, what's the logjam there? And call it.
Well, I think the logjam is caused by, you have people that may wish to buy these properties, but they can't get a mortgage on them because of the state of the property. And that's what's causing the difficulties, really. And that's why some grant systems or some loan systems to improve properties would help in that area.
Chris Thomas?
No, I agree. We need grants. The other issue about, as well as the properties, is the person sometimes, because an enthusiastic DIYer can cause problems for the property, which is what the lenders see. So we need some sort of system to help, and there are many ideas from around these islands. The other point I would say is there is a vision amongst the current government that we all want to live in apartments. Whenever I ask people, they come to the Isle of Man because they want a back garden and a front garden, and they want a little bit of space, and they don't want to live in a Manchester or London or Liverpool. Otherwise, they'd be living in Manchester or London or Liverpool. And so, therefore, we've got to deal with that. And I can promise Stephen and everybody else who's listening that I will campaign for grants. I will campaign for better lending and for a system to help people do up vacant properties. And we've got to remember that at the moment, there's only tens of houses scheduled to be built in the east of the Isle of Man. And whenever I've been to Ballacameen for young people, when they come back to the island, they want to live in a house. They don't want to live in the apartment. They can go to Manchester or Liverpool or London or Glasgow or Edinburgh to do that.
We did ask this actually while we were campaigning before the last election. Yeah. And the students at Ballacameen were very clear if they wanted to buy something that was a house rather than an apartment.
We're with Anne Corlett and Chris Thomas, Douglas Central MHK's on Man in Line today.
Whether you're fitting out a business office or looking for a stylish home office, you'll find excellent choice at Office World, the island's largest display showroom of office furniture, with a huge array of desk configurations, including height adjustable and bench options, plus seating in mesh, fabric and vinyl finishes, along with a myriad of storage solutions, from filing cabinets to bookcases and cupboards. Find all this and so much more at Office World on Spring Valley Industrial Estate. Office
World! Make your Easter lunch extra special with delicious mains, sides and trimmings from ShopRite. Show-stopping savers with half-price fresh beef, pork and lamb roasting joints. How about a large whole British chicken for just £5? If fish is your dish, there's half-price sides of boneless salmon and four fresh salmon fillets for just £8. Our Peel and Ramsey stores have over a third off succulent cuts of Manx sirloin, rump and fillet. With loads more savers across the stores, you'll enjoy a cracking Easter weekend with ShopRite.
Your home is your castle, and we think that too. So when you're thinking of new flooring, think Castle Carpets. With over 50 rolls of stock and thousands of samples to choose from, let us carpet your castle. Call 842 480 or visit the showroom in Peel.
Ramsey Garden Centre is open every day over Easter. And with being three times larger than last year, it is well worth a visit. New choices for indoor and out. Visit Ramsey Garden Centre on Albert Road, or check out our Facebook.
How do I get out? No!
Grandad, it's not real.
The fun never stops with Shaw's unlimited fibre broadband. From £39.95 a month, it's the cheapest on island. Landline not needed. Find out more at shaw.com or see us in store.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Got an email in, and it is from, let me see, Helen, who just said, the rumour is that Lord Street flats are being sold to a private developer. Have you heard anything about that? Well, just to put that under the heading of skeet, Helen. Alan said, can you ask your guests, it'll be interesting to see how Dandara cope with flooding and parking at Lake Road, the new development. Is that going ahead, and call it?
Well, the plans are in. DfE have in principle agreed some grants, so that's already been announced.
So this will be the site that's currently the make-believe car park opposite Tesco, isn't it? There, so they're going to be apartments all the way down from what used to be the old EB Christian right down to where there's the end of the Tesco car park.
Where the old mortuary used to be.
Very nice.
I think for 109, it'll just be the first phase of that.
How many are they talking about?
I think originally they paid £3 million or whatever it was to get the old Douglas City Council facilities, the old mortuary, and I think it's in phases, but it's the first phase. It's the one that's closest from West Quay, if it's the same as the one that I've seen previously. To deal with the first point, flood risk management, incredibly, Dandara didn't get planning permission 12 years ago, or thereabouts, because of flood risk management. I noticed from the pictures that you're showing on your news story that the buildings are still turned round. They leave space for the water to go through between the buildings rather than being up against the river. And I think that from when I read the plans a while back, I think they're... Because to be fair to Dandara, they have been round talking to the community. They have been sharing parts about it. I think that's to do with addressing some of the flood risk issues, because it's definitely in a flood risk area. And if I remember as well, there's also talk about access in terms of a footpath along the river. That's always been there. So I'm intrigued to read more on the application details on the site.
Does it flood that often, Nan? How many times has it flooded?
Loads.
Yeah, it's if there's plans to the flood risk by diverting water, surely that just makes a problem somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get to the lines. And I think we've got Brian with us now. Hi, Brian. You're live with Anne Corlett and Chris Thomas.
Hello, Andy, Chris and Anne. This is for Chris, actually.
There's a lot of private developers, actually, own brownfield sites as well, actually. And recently, the government are offering them 25% of the cost, the build cost, to develop these sites. Has that come about by private developers lobbying the chief minister simply because they've set up their own arm's length development corporation and allowing them a facility of £100 million to borrow to develop, you know, their own schemes?
Well,
when really private developers know what the market is, and they can, you know, they'll build what's out there. Does this with their own money?
So the Ireland infrastructure scheme, from where that up to 25% comes, isn't actually even the same £100 million from Lloyds Bank to Manx Development Corporation. It's actually taken from the Economic Fund, which is part of our national reserves. So it's actually, if you think that's bad, it's worse than you think it is, because it's a separate pool of money. That's the first point. The second point is additional to the £100 million for MDC facility. The second point is I am sceptical like you, and I never voted for the Ireland infrastructure scheme in council ministers, and I didn't vote for it in Tynwald, even though I was a minister. I actually left the room when it was voted on in Tynwald, and Anne and Mrs. Corlett and Mr. Ashford have made the point recently that it's pretty confusing when it gets to commuted sums and housing, and we had an assurance from the Minister of Enterprise that they would go back and look at that. There's also the issue of this link to do with the bus station facilities, because that's all Lord Street is another candidate site for this grant, and why wouldn't you just build the bus station and build the private development around it? So I'm as sceptical as you are. I've given you my voting history, and that's one of the reasons why the alternative policy is needed, and that's why I'm working with others to put together alternative policy. To me, we should be spending money directly on a bus station and on housing. We shouldn't be setting up an arm's length body or working with the private sector necessarily to do all these things.
Okay.
The last point is there is a thing called the development viability assessment, which was completed about 18 months ago. That needs to be published, and I called for that to be published this week in Keys.
Okay, all right. Thanks, Brian.
I just want to follow on, actually. Can I follow on?
Okay, briefly, if you would, yeah.
Briefly. Yeah, it's just that a lot of other local authorities across the water there have set up development corporations, and a lot of them have got into trouble. They've gone bankrupt with jobs half finished, you know. So if that happened here at Westmorland Road, would the government have to bail them out again? Because, you know,
exactly.
That's,
exactly.
You'll
exactly.
End up like Liverpool landing stage.
Anyway. Well, it's a government guaranteed facility. Treasury guarantees it. So if what you describe were to happen, Treasury and the public would be wearing the loan. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks for that, Brian. I just want to move on quickly, because something that Anne Corlett has championed over the years came up in an email from Sarah, who just said the 20 is plenty campaign at the moment. What's the state of play?
Well, the state of play is I'm still trying very hard to get it implemented. You know, twice now I have brought through motions, once in the last house, once in this, which were fully supported for residential areas to be 20 miles an hour. And I'm still waiting for infrastructure to even report on it. I am despairing at how long the Department of Infrastructure can ignore the will of Tynwald on this. I'll be bringing up quite soon is they did a consultation around Ballacameen and have had the responses in for that. And I'd really like to know what's going to happen now that the responses are in and what the infrastructure intend to do.
Sarah finishes her email just saying, I don't want to be extreme, but is it going to take a child to be killed for anybody to do something about this?
That is ultimately it, isn't it? That's the awful thing about this.
It would happen if something like that happened, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. And you know what? Why can't we just be proactive instead of reactive? And not only for safety, for people's way of life, for our communities. You know, this is what people are asking for, or the majority of people asking for. Not everybody's in favour of it. And I, as I say, I am just frustrated. I will not stop, but I am totally frustrated at the lack of activity.
Chris Thomas?
No, I support it. I support better road safety. I support reclaiming residential streets for the people who live there and the people who provide services there and have businesses there. That's important. We, you know, our roads are not just cut-throughs when you're driving fast from Jerby because you're late for a meeting. They are places where we live. The reality, though, is DOI is the only department in government that's lost lots of roles. And as soon as the consultation response document was finished for this project, those roles disappeared. They're not in place anymore, as far as I know. When DOI applied to Treasury for funds for this project, they were turned down. So that's the reality. It's easy for Treasury to encourage the public to blame DOI, but the reality is there are 80 fewer jobs in DOI than there were 5 years ago, and anything that DOI proposes is always turned down. That's a starting point. And it's not quite true, but it's more or less a starting point.
We appreciate the breadth and scale of the responsibilities DOI have got, but you know they have run a consultation, and I do applaud them for the way they did it. They really did involve the community around the Ballacamine area. But actually, now, come on, can we not just lower the speed limit and put the signs up and see what happens?
Okay, well, let's try and get one more call in just before the end of Man in Line today.
The Loganair Easter sale is now on. Fly from the Isle of Man to Manchester, London Heathrow and London City Airport. Save up to 15% off over 1 million seats across the Loganair network. Book by 2nd April, travel from 26th April. Subject to availability, exclusions apply. Visit loganair.co.uk. Your journey, our joy.
Spectrum Window.
Have you been invited to take part in the Household Income and Expenditure Survey? It's one of the most important surveys for our island because the information you provide is vital data for our island's financial planning. It helps us calculate our VAT revenue from the UK. Plus, it gives us a better understanding of the financial strains on residents so we can support those who are struggling. March is the last month you can take part. So visit gov.im/HIES now.
Staying younger looking, it's our primary objective. The holy grail of skin aesthetics. But it's not any one product, it's a state of mind. At the Tracy Bell Clinic, it's our passion and desire to innovate, to reinvent, recreate, reimagine everything over and over again. Are you ready for a change? Try our exclusive Alma Laser Skin Treatment. The results are remarkable. Call the Tracy Bell Clinic on 613 323 for a consultation.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Andrew, you're live with Anne Corlett and Chris Thomas, MHKs.
Hi, good day to you, and Anne and Chris. I think principally this is maybe directed at Anne in her capacity as Deputy Speaker. Now, congratulations. And it's regarding changes to the Constitution. Now, I've been informed by a member that his belief is, when I asked him how many votes would be needed to, say, reduce the number of MHKs, he says, I would guess a majority vote in Tynwald. Okay. So, firstly, is that correct? And presupposing it is, then I would make it a comparison with, say, a private company, whereby to change a company's constitution, you need 75% of the members to vote for it.
Okay, well, so on many issues, you do need a two-third majority in order to carry a vote. On something like that, I, off the top of my head, I really couldn't tell you. I have my doubts that that would require a simple majority, but I can't say for certain.
Any ideas, Chris Thomas?
So you want to reduce the number of MHKs from 24 to a number below 24, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Just as an example, as
so
a
I think that 24 number is set in primary legislation. So there would have to be a bill to amend that primary legislation. Mm-hmm. So that would have to go through the House of Keys, and then it would have to go through the Legislative Council, and if it doesn't come out of the Legislative Council, if Keys have voted for it, it can then go back just to the House of Keys, at which point you need 2/3 majority. So yeah. Anne's right. So that's how I changed. That's how I got the Chief Minister elected from the House of Keys. Mm-hmm. Legislative Council just ignored it, and so then I surprised them one Christmas and just took it to the House of Keys, and 17 people mm-hmm. voted for it. So yeah. It would need a 2/3 majority of the House of Keys if the Legislative Council were against it.
Andrew?
And a 2/3 majority in the House of Keys is how many numbers, please, Chris? Just so our listeners
16,
know.
17.
Yeah, 16, 17, depending on who's there. I forget exactly how it's worded, but I think I got 17.
So there's 24 members, so you would need 17 votes to carry it.
Okay.
Right. So at the moment, for example, the Constitution, in my mind, is being changed by 13 votes to 9 to remove the vote of the bishop. So why, if that's the case, should it not be with this other rule that at least 17 people are needed to vote for it?
Oh, no, well, that could happen. It could be that the Legislative Council votes against it, in which mm-hmm. it would think, or it could be that the Legislative Council just sit on it. So that could all happen. Then the Royal Assent could be withheld. And then I've got an amendment for the Bishop's vote, which means it has to go back to Tim Wood to bring it into force. So that's where we are now. That's what Minister Hooper talks about in terms of wrecking amendments. They're not wrecking amendments. They're just to make sure that democracy prevails.
OK, all right. That's it for Man in Line today with Anne Corlett and Chris Thomas, Douglas Central MHKs, just Douglas South to come, and Glenn Faber and Peel, and that'll be in April. In the meantime, thanks for being with us, Anne. Good to talk to you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And Chris Thomas,
thanks. Thank you very much for having me.
Have a great Easter. Man in Line returns. Open line on Tuesday.
WINT.